Welcome to the Animus podcast. Today we'll be talking with Mira O'Gorman. She'll be sharing with us her journey through the corporate world as she shifted from HR into coaching and coaching supervision. She'll also be sharing with us her journey through Animus, becoming the Animus supervisor trainer. Hey Mira, it's great to have you with us today. Why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about what you're doing right now?
Sure. So right now I'm involved in two things. I've got my personal business, Coaching with Mia, which I started just 6 months ago, and that's for me to do life coaching, executive coaching, and coaching supervision. Within that, I'm delighted to have been asked to lead tutor on the Animas Diploma in Coaching Supervision starting in September. Then the second thing I'm involved in is a collaborative venture with friends and colleagues, which is a leadership development business in the corporate market, and that's called Fourth Path.
Okay, so tell us a little bit more about what you're doing with Fourth Path.
Sure. So with Fourth Path, the proposition is around vertical development. So the idea that in this now fourth industrial revolution with an ever-increasing pace of technology, there's a gap between technology development and human development. So it's about bridging that gap through a vertical development process. So that involves for leaders being able to transform their mindset so that they can really evolve their capacities and their ability to create an effective culture for the organisation. That will then result in enhanced performance and enhanced well-being for the employees.
Nice. I like that idea about that, you know, creating a culture, an environment where those things can exist. Because if it's a good environment and your workers are happy, then they're going to be more productive and deliver what you need them to deliver.
Yeah, it's exactly that. And of course, then increases employee engagement as well, which is so much on the agenda for a lot of large organisations now.
And so your coaching, Coaching with Mia, you've only just started that a couple of months ago?
Yeah, that's right. So I'm 6 months into being self-employed, which feels fantastic, scary, but really loving the journey. And prior to that, my background was 11 years in consultancy roles, including a lot of coaching within that and coach development. And then before that, about 8-9 years in corporate HR roles, again, leadership development focused, including being an internal coach. Such a long time ago, it was still called personnel when I started doing it. It wasn't even called HR.
Personnel. Yep. Oh, wow. Okay. So you're an internal coach. So I know a lot of coaches often are really interested in, you know, how does one become an internal coach? How did that journey arrive for you?
So I think it was one of the greatest blessings in my career that I discovered coaching really early on. So at the time, I was at HBOS Bank, and as an HR team, we had a brief introduction to coaching skills, including the GROW model, run by our head of learning and development for our region. And it just resonated from the outset with what I already believed about how people should be treated and how learning should happen. From there, the bank wanted to roll out a programme of culture change and to have around 2,000 managers in the bank branch network start to lead with more of a coaching style. Okay. So around 20 of us in the business were trained by John Whitmore's company, Performance Consultants.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a tremendous opportunity. And then I must have delivered around 15 two-day coaching skills workshops for leaders throughout the bank in the following year.
Brilliant, that sounds really great.
Yeah.
What was it like working with John Whitmore's organisation?
It was fantastic. So we had these two of the founders, David Hemery and David Whitaker, ran that five-day Train the Trainer programme for us. So they're just kind of legends in their own fields. So to learn from some of the people who'd been so instrumental in starting to bring some of the philosophies of coaching from the sporting world into the business world was amazing. Just feel like I had, you know, such strong foundations in place from that in terms of connecting with what it was like to be coached, really developing the core skills, and using the GROW framework. But also one of the things I loved from them was they said, look, it's just an outline. They said, in fact, see it like the Windows software running in the background of your computer. You don't have to follow it rigidly. It's there to support you. So it was actually very humanistic in the approach. It was by no means all about the model itself.
That's really interesting, because often when I've spoken to people about the GROW model, they've been very fixed. about, and it's like they've taken it away from what it was originally set out to be.
Sure.
And they've got caught up in the model itself.
Yeah, and in fact, in a two-day training, they would strongly recommend not even getting into the model until the second day. The first day would all be about connecting with experiences of being coached in the past, so whether it be through teachers or family members that had really believed in you, maybe people not even in a coaching role, but the human impact of someone having that unswerving belief in you. Then into the core skills, listening, questioning, holding other people in high regard, seeing their potential. And yeah, only actually introducing the model on the second day of a short two-day leadership skills programme.
And that, of course, means that we're not stuck on the model. Mm. We're actually thinking about, who is this person that I'm working with? How do I connect with this person? And then it just becomes something in the background that we hold lightly to do the work with.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Then going on from there, as my career developed, I was able to get progressively, I guess what I'd say, deeper into different ways of coaching. So as a consultant, I was trained in tools such as Myers-Briggs, type indicator, personality profiling, trained as an NLP practitioner. And then in the later years, as a consultant, learned more psychology. So I worked for SHL for 4 years, and then the consultancy JCA I left most recently was an occupational psychology firm with a specialism in emotional intelligence. So it's a much more psychologically based approach, and I was able to take a postgrad certificate in business and executive coaching during the time I was there.
And how did you find that psychological way of working? How did that impact you as a coach?
It's really interesting, particularly working in the corporate space. Although I loved the learning, what I recognised during the course of doing that PG cert was that I was sometimes holding back from going there in that work in a way that I tended not to when I was coaching fellow students on the programme itself in our practice sessions. And that became the theme for my final reflective practice piece. I borrowed from Star Trek, so I called it To Boldly Go in Service, Becoming a More Psychologically Minded Coach. But what I learned through that is that even in a corporate setting where the you know, the presenting issues might be about performance or skills, actually, to really help people with transitions and get to transformation, it's completely appropriate to go there in terms of working psychologically, working with unconscious material, and going, you know, really deep enough, just deep enough to help that person get where they need to.
It's really interesting in sort of hearing you say that, because I know when I first started coaching a few years ago now, they would often talk about when you work with executives, you don't do the humanistic stuff. It's all about what they want to achieve. But I'd always find that actually you would do that humanistic stuff. You would do that emotional based stuff, because that often was sitting at the root of why they weren't achieving within the office.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that was really the learning for me. So then felt much freer to engage with people at that level. And of course, the impact was much better in terms of coaching outcomes achieved. An example would be working with a real technical specialist lawyer who was aspiring to become partner. One of the things on his list of objectives was to enhance his business development skills. Whereas actually when we got into it, it was much more about his emotional response to that and seeing it as quite smarmy and things that he just didn't identify himself with. So some of the work was around reframing what it could be and finding a way that he could authentically, as quite a quiet, introverted personality, find ways to connect with his clients away from the transactional legal work and have the depth of relationship and be a trusted advisor. So that he then evolved this, say, very natural, quiet style of developing his business, which in the end was highly effective for him, and he achieved his partnership.
Lovely. It does make me smile when people talk about, well, that's the presenting issue. That's the thing they say they want to work on. But often it's that something else just kind of sitting underneath the surface, and that's just an indicator as to where we might go.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And the great thing with that example was we had the real support of the organisation to have, you know, an extended coaching assignment. So I worked with him initially for around a year in the build-up to partnership, and we had a little break for a few months, and then we did some further sessions on his transition into the partner role. And it was about then stepping up to that new identity and who he needed to be as a leader to support the more junior lawyers coming up through the ranks.
It's great to hear you talk about working with somebody for a year. So often I hear coaches talk about, you know, 6 sessions and 12 sessions and these real short time frames. And to hear you say that's really refreshing. Is that something that you've always done, or was something that you created?
It tends to evolve where it's needed. So I'm a big believer in coaching as being, you know, relatively short term, in that you don't want to create dependence on the coaching relationship. So for me, in those coaching consultancy assignments, we'd normally contract on the basis of a number of sessions, typically 6, spaced out maybe monthly, 6 weekly. But then we would have the option to recontract. We'd have a mid-session review to say, does 6 still feel right? Do we need more? And again at the end. So we would often do what I did in that case, which is take a break, let that person settle with the learning from the original contract, but then come back in either at an agreed time or when it just feels right to continue the work. So, yeah, it was just excellent that he had the support of the organisation to do what was needed.
Cool. And just thinking about organisationally, were there ever any challenges around the organisation's desire to know what was happening in the coaching or to drive the coaching and that whole kind of confidentiality piece?
In that case, no, because I would say, in exception to some of the other leaders I heard about in that firm, that individual's line manager was incredibly supportive, and we had very sort of open conversations between the three of us in the initial setup of the assignment, and then we'd agree that I might meet with the manager and share certain things, or that the individual might just sit down with him directly and talk about how it was going. So in that particular case, because of good personal relationships, that was easy. What was interestingly, a bit more systemically, if you like, in the organisation, was some of the resistance as my coachee started to make the changes that were being asked of him. So he was told to become a partner, do more business development, spend less time on basic transactional work. Well, that was fine until one of the really senior partners had a lot of transactional work to give him. And then that individual really didn't like it when my coachee said no, because I'm concentrating on my business development now.
Yeah.
So the sort of the ripples of that change and the resistance to it in the organisation was one of the challenging things for my coachee to overcome.
And did you ever work with the organisation itself about those sort of systemic issues?
Not directly. So with the individual and helping him be assertive and strong in his position of appropriately saying no, or escalating where he needed support from his line manager or other partners, and then also with the line manager, it was something that we discussed to help enlist his support. It was one particularly tricky individual, but not in a broader sense on that particular assignment. Although later, around 2 years later, we did a much bigger leadership development piece, because the firm wanted to completely change how they prepared lawyers for partnership. So was involved in winning and designing and delivering a piece of work to look at that talent pipeline from 2 years out.
Nice, nice. I always find it interesting when organisations want somebody to change, want somebody to develop. You go in and you do some work with them and they go, oh, wait a minute, they're changing too much. Or they're developing too fast, and other people don't like it, or are kind of put out of kilter with it. So you also mentioned that you're now doing the supervision. So you're working with Animus, you're working with us on our supervision course.
Yeah.
So where does supervision fit into all of that for you?
So for me, supervision is sort of the next big chapter in the journey. One of the things I most love about coaching is that it's generative. So you will help someone with their presenting issue. Inevitably, you'll work on deeper issues that will help them be more effective, you know, happier, more productive as a person. So that's coaching. Training others as coaches, which has been another strand, is then generative at a higher level, because if I can help other people become better coaches, and then they're going to go out and work with, you know, potentially hundreds, even thousands of people over the course of a career, then that to me is just magical. So supervision as one strand of developing other coaches just felt really natural as something that I wanted to do. Also because of the coach training that I was doing, and as it started to be formal programs, in one case EMCC accredited, supervision would be part of those programs. So while right now it's a really young part of the industry, you don't have to be qualified in order to supervise others, I really strongly felt that I did want to become a qualified supervisor myself. Hence took the Diploma in Coaching Supervision with Animas in the first cohort. Now to have the opportunity to teach on that, say, just fits with that, I suppose, vision for me of being as generative as possible in the work that I can do.
I was having a conversation with Bronwyn around the ripple effects of the work that we do. So, you know, when you coach somebody, that has an effect on the people around them. Mm. When you train coaches, it has an effect on the people that they then go and coach.
Sure.
And when we supervise as well, that has a ripple effect on people. And there's something really privileged to be in a position to kind of do that.
Yeah. And it's just wonderful work to do. To hear about other people's coaching practice, their ways of working, to help them maybe sometimes process the leftover emotions, or it can be a little bit like a Rubik's Cube, sort of trying to unlock what's going on in that relationship, or how can they better be in service of or help their clients. I find it just fascinating and rewarding work to do.
Awesome. So what's next for you then? So you're kind of, I know you're part of the partnership, you've got your own coaching, you're doing the supervision training with Animas. Is that leading somewhere? Is there a vision for Mia?
I would love to keep making coaching and coach development work a bigger and bigger part of what I do. Right now, to be building that portfolio career, as I guess it gets called, and that's the dream that I've held for a long time. And because I'm just a few months in, I'm kind of really just enjoying that and experimenting with where I can take it. I guess where would I love to end up ultimately would be to be a renowned coach supervisor, tutor of programs, and sort out to do that so it becomes a bigger and bigger part of my work and my world.
Mm. And what would you say would be the drive for that? Because you said earlier on about you wanted to be self-employed, and I know often people want to be employed because there's a whole kind of safety net around that as well. What was the drive for you to become self-employed?
Gosh, I think it's partly something I've always seen I would do. My dad had his own company, and I always really admired that, even through some really up and down times in our relationship. And there's something about the freedom to create. To be boss of your own destiny, right now I'm glad just to be boss of my own diary. After 11 years in consulting and lots of 6 o'clock in the morning trains, actually just to have taken that step into a different lifestyle is it's done wonders for me in the last few months.
And so I know that sometimes people are quite anxious about becoming freelance. If you were going to give somebody a tip or a bit of advice around that, what might that be?
So I think at a really practical level is to take care of things like the money. So I was lucky to have an inheritance a couple of years ago, and it was a big decision of conscience to choose to back myself with that money, because in reality it can take time for a business to build. So I think there's something around take care of yourself, take care of what you need to, so that practically you can make it work day to day. I think then have some good strategies in place. So in my case, that's been around having different income streams. So as well as my own coaching and the partnership I'm involved in with corporate work, I'm using an old skill set around the executive assessment space and doing some associate work for other friends that have set up their own businesses. And I think the other one is more a belief thing. If you believe in yourself, then just go for it, because I think when you move with purpose. I've been so encouraged in the last 6 months by people in my network that have reached out to me, asked me to get involved with things. And I think there's so much support out there. People admire you for doing it and want to help you succeed.
So you're doing the supervision with Animas. How did you find us?
So I decided I wanted to commit to becoming qualified as a supervisor, and I wanted that to be an accredited program. So you know, popped that into to Google and up you came. So I then had almost straight away a chat box pop up from your colleague Nathan, who's moved on, I think, since then. But within the next couple of days, then spoke to Nick just after he returned from one of his trips to the mountains. So I was just struck immediately by the energy, the authenticity around the organisation, Nick's huge enthusiasm for the programme. So it was new, first cohort going through. And as I've got to know Animas more, that energy is definitely still incredibly present, but the sense of community is just incredible. So I've experienced that through things like the lounge and the Facebook groups, but also I was able to attend the summit in September. It was actually just a few days after I'd finished my full-time employment, so it really marked a transition into this new phase for me. And, yeah, to be in there with a room full of such energised, diverse, but amazing practitioners and sort of hear stories from people like Liz Goodchild finishing off the day, you know, to rousing and well-deserved applause. It was, just a wonderful thing to be part of.
And if I was to have a coaching session with Mia, what might that be like?
So a piece of feedback I get really consistently from clients of all kinds is that they've hugely valued the opportunity to hear themselves think and coming away clearer and more confident about the actions that they're going to take, whatever the outcome. When I've asked people around what creates that sense of clarity, it's come back to kind of deep listening skills, reflecting back and reframing, and asking questions that sometimes surprise people a little bit and help them see themselves or their situation in a different way.
Brilliant, lovely. Well, it's been absolutely great talking with you, Mia. If people want to find you, where do they need to go?
So for coaching or supervision, www.coachingwithmia.com. And if people are interested in the corporate space, then it's www.fourthpath.com.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.